Paul understood that marriage is the normal course for most people, but he also knew that it just isn't for everyone.
Welcome to Mission 66 from the Bible Teaching Ministry of Pastor Luis Seau and TWR. John Matthews and Esther Sisulu have been leading us through Paul's letter to the Corinthians. If you have your study guide, then follow along with John and Esther. Let's get started.
Well, today we'll look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7, which is entirely devoted to the subject of marriage. Now, our teacher, John Matthews, will bring us what the Apostle Paul says to those who are married, for those who may be thinking about marriage, and for those who are still single. The theme is, to marry or not to marry? That is the question.
Esther, that is a question, isn't it? great to be with you all for Mission 66 once again, with Esther throwing that little poser down for us, and we're going to be looking at that in today's episodes. But look, let's start at this point, because you know, you'll be listening to Mission 66, and the truth is that relationships, they can be so complex, can't they? And sometimes people get married with an idea of what that might look like, perhaps with stars in their eyes, but they pretty quickly find out that the person that they've pledged their life to be with may well not be anything like what they envisioned they were going to be like, and they may become disillusioned and resentful. They may realize themselves, faced with the mirror that is marriage, are not what they would like to be either. So it takes hard work. Or perhaps they begin to long for the good old days and look back with these rose-tinted spectacles to what went before, the days perhaps of singlehood. And yet the fact remains that marriage is part of God's design for the procreation of the human race, and most people statistically still will wind up in a marriage relationship. And we've all got to work our way through that relationship, and it's not easy. You know, in many situations, it's really hard. Children can often result from that relationship, and daily life goes on, sometimes with joy and exhilaration, other times in a long, tiring journey filled with temptations and pitfalls. And people who've been married a long time will all say that it comes down to one thing. Very often you'll hear them say the happiest marriage partners on earth are the best forgivers. To marry or not to marry? This is a very real question. Well, the Apostle Paul, what about him? Well, he was single when he began his ministry to the Gentiles. Whether he'd be married at some point or not, the Bible doesn't actually say. Some do think that he must have been married because he was on the path to becoming a member of the council, the Jewish Sanhedrin, and that members of the Sanhedrin comprised only of married men. Well, if Paul had had a wife, perhaps she died, but that's something that we won't go into here, because we're not going to go beyond what's written in the Bible. But Paul's advice in chapter 7 begins by answering a previous letter that was sent to him by the Corinthians. So let's see what he says from verse 1. Now, concerning the matters about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, the commonly understood meaning of depriving one another has to do here with sexual fulfillment. In this way, Paul talks about each being dependent upon the consent of the other, but it could mean other things too, like respect and helpfulness and so on. Paul goes on in verse 6 to say, "Now, as a concession, not a command, I say this, I wish that all whereas I myself am. But each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. So by this, Paul is admitting that he's single at the time of this writing. He's also saying that he has this gift of celibacy. And this is something that is God-given, where the person does not need sex in order to be happy and productive. But he does not require that of others. That's what he's saying. He goes on in verse 8 to say, to the unmarried and the widows, I say that it's good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, then they should marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. There you have it, to marry or not to marry. And important, I think, to be firm on this, marriage is a God-ordained institution which has his full blessing. It should therefore be upheld and honoured. But before entering into marriage, one should know that God does expect certain things of married people, and there are responsibilities and limitations which accompany it. And Paul goes on to tell us some of those. But this is not a complete list. It's just the things he's highlighting from verse 10 on. To the married, I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. The wife should not separate from her husband. But if she does, she should remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. And the husband should not divorce his wife. You see, Paul is making a reference here to what Jesus taught in Matthew chapter 19. And one of let's put it in some context of the day, because divorce at that time was very common among both Jews and Gentiles. But the truth is that divorce and separation is forbidden for a Christian, except where there has been adultery or sexual immorality or abuse. But now with the breakdown of society, churches have begun to admit that there may be other reasons for the breaking of this union. But Jesus was saying that from the beginning it was God's intention for a man and a wife to continue their marriage until the death of one or the other. And even if there were good reasons for divorce, that you don't have to divorce. And the point being made, I think, is that sometimes there is more virtue in terms of enhancing the reputation of God by sticking at it. If you've broken your marriage vow and have divorced for, let's say, frivolous reasons, well, it's impossible sometimes to turn back the clock and undo what is done. But important that we admit before God and seek his forgiveness and grace, which is freely offered, of course, just as we would do in any other situation where we feel that we may have done another person wrong. And we should also have the attitude that by the grace of God, I do not intend to repeat that. So God forgives freely when forgiveness is sought, and we should be glad of that. And God is not, through the writings of Paul here, trying to make us feel defensive. On the contrary, he's reminding us that there is forgiveness on hand when it's needed. But what if he got tired of our misbehavior and said, no more forgiveness for you? But God doesn't do that. Thank his name for that. He doesn't divorce those who've believed on his son, and we ought to emulate him by being faithful and persevere in our marriage relationships through the bad times as well as the good. And on, Paul goes in verse 12 to say, to the rest I say, I, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he should not divorce her. If any woman has a husband who's an unbeliever and he consents to live with her, she should not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband is made holy because of his wife, and the unbelieving wife is made holy because of her husband. Otherwise your children would be unclean, but as it is, they are holy. But if the unbelieving partner separates, let it be so. In such cases, the brother or sister is not enslaved. God has called you to peace. For how do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? And Paul is speaking to those who are caught in a situation where one is a believer and the other isn't. And he's saying, do not automatically think that you should get out of that marriage. If the other party is willing to remain, stick with it. And God knows, or who knows, God knows what the future will hold, and you may well be able to encourage them toward faith. Verse 17, only Let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision, for neither circumcision counts for anything nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God. Paul's saying the Christian faith is not a matter of externals. Remember, the church at Corinth had many members who had come from many different backgrounds. And so Paul goes on to say each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. Were you a bondservant when called? Do not be concerned about it. But if you gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. For he who was called in the Lord as a bondservant is a free man of the Lord. Likewise, he who was free when called is a bondservant of Christ. You were bought with a price, says Paul. Do not become bondservants of men. So, brothers, in whatever condition each was called, there let them remain with God. Now, concerning the betrothed, says Paul, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. This is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none, and those who mourn as though they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, and those who buy as though they had no goods, and those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it. For the present form of this world is passing away. And Paul here is saying that this world is not our home. We are merely passing through. For the believer, our home is in heaven, and that is where our eyes should be fixed ultimately. Verse 32, Paul says, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. If anybody thinks that he or she is not behaving properly towards his betrothed, if their passions are strong and it has to be, let them do as they wish. Let them marry. It is no sin. But whoever is firmly established in their heart, being under no necessity but having their desires under control, and have determined this in their hearts to keep her as his betrothed, he will do well. So then, he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Yet in my judgment, she is happier if she remains as she is. And I think that I too have the Spirit of God. Paul is calling for us to consider all the implications, not to act rashly on impulse, but to use our brains when it comes to choices in our lives, especially those that are life-altering decisions, of which marriage is one. To marry or not to marry, it is a big question, Esther.
This is Mission 66, and this is a program in which we study all 66 books of the Bible, a chapter at a time. And currently, we're in a study of Paul's first letter to the Corinthian church, and we're focusing on chapter 7. Well, I'm Esther, and our teacher is John Matthews. Now, let me just take a moment to encourage you to follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. Now, there you can ask questions and engage with our other listeners, and you can also leave a comment about today's episode. Be a part of the Mission 66 conversation, and we really look forward to seeing you there and interacting with you on Facebook and on Instagram. Now, John, you know what? I am curious. Do you think that Paul was saying that it's best to remain unmarried or to just go ahead and get married?
It's a good question. And I don't think Paul's promoting one more than the other. He presents both sides of the situation and is very honest about both sides as well. You know, he himself is writing as a single person, but he doesn't require others to be so. He says, if your passions get out of hand, go ahead and marry. It's better to do that than to get immersed in sexual sin. You know, sin is not permitted in either state, and so we are expected to take responsibility for our desires. And Paul knew that marriage is indeed the normal course for many of us, but he also knew that it just isn't for everyone. And so you have a good marriage. Well, what will a good marriage do? It's a marriage where children are brought up in the love of the Lord, and that can be a tremendous benefit and help to society. But also, married folks eventually find that their interests are divided between the needs of family, the needs of a job, church, whatever else. And single people, the truth is, will have a greater amount of freedom to come and go as they are led. And the reality is they only have to worry about themselves. So it certainly, Esther, comes down to personal choice.
That's a great explanation. Okay, I want us to look at verse 4. Paul says something very interesting here. He says that a wife doesn't have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband doesn't have authority over his own body, but his wife does. So how do we understand this? How should we understand it?
Well, Esther, it takes two to tango, doesn't it? And Paul is being very real here and speaking plainly about the intimacy between a man and a woman, and the fact that a sexual union takes two people, a husband and a wife. That's what's required to procreate. And Paul is so instructing married people who serve God, who are reading the Bible and they've got a devotional life, but they also need to tend to each other's intimate needs and meet each other's sexual needs.
All right. So tell me, what does it mean when verse 14 talks about children being sanctified that would otherwise be unclean?
Well, the use of the words clean and unclean here come from the old ceremonial law. And so Paul is telling faithful married believers that even though their spouses may be unbelievers, if they themselves are believers, marriage was to them a holy state. And so an unbelieving husband is sanctified for the wife's sake, and an unbelieving wife is sanctified for the husband's sake. Now, both are considered one flesh in the eyes of God, and their marital relations, and indeed any children that result from those relations, were then also considered clean. Doesn't mean that the unbelieving spouse is automatically saved. Everyone individually must repent toward God and believe on Jesus themselves. And that goes obviously as well for the children.
You know, John, as believers, what we believe is that all scripture is God-breathed and that God's Spirit moved faithful men to write exactly what God wanted written. But here in chapter 7, there are a couple places where Paul seems to give his own opinion on things. So how can we be sure that these statements by Paul are inspired by God?
Yeah, I think you're referring there to verse 6, where Paul says, I say this as a concession, not as a command. In verse 10, he definitely says to the married, I give this command, not I, but the Lord. Verse 12, he says, to the rest, I say this, I, not the Lord. And, you know, I don't see a problem with that. What Paul is saying as a concession is not necessarily something that you are obliged to do. Instead, it's his advice. And when God speaks, we must obey. But if Paul says, look, this is not a command, it may well be good advice, but it doesn't fall into the same category of having to obey.
So let's go ahead and look at verse 10, where it talks about a husband and a wife separating. You know, one could actually look at this and think that it's saying that a woman is forbidden to get a divorce no matter the situation. And perhaps you could provide some clarity on this verse, John.
Yeah, when we read verse 10, Esther, it says that a wife mustn't separate from her husband. It might come across as an absolute declaration, but how do we understand it then, especially when we, you know, compare it to Matthew 19? The Bible says or speaks against separation other than in certain circumstances. In the context of the New Testament, the indications are clear that separation includes and means divorce, such as when a person would receive a letter or a document or a certification of divorce, and that document permitted a second marriage. Now, it's clear that if there's a case of porneia, or in other words, sexual immorality, then the marriage would be undone. So then the obligation is removed. Here it says that a woman cannot separate. Why does it say that? Well, because the question being considered is another one. The question here in chapter 7 is whether or not a person should get a divorce from their husband or wife if they are not Christians. And in this case, separation, it says, is forbidden. Doesn't mean, though, that a marriage should continue if one of the spouses is living a promiscuous, immoral life, and, in effect, acting unfaithfully against their spouse. So cases like these, there is a difference, and we can't confuse this case where separation, it says, is forbidden due to an unbelieving spouse with other cases. In cases of sexual immorality, then separation and divorce is indeed it's permitted according to what's written here in the New Testament.
Great. Thank you for that. Well, John, we've come to the end of today's study. So how should we conclude this very important chapter?
Yeah, let's do that. And chapter 7 then of 1 Corinthians is one that upholds marriage as this God-ordained institution, which is totally honourable and fully blessed by God. But it's not mandatory. And Paul gives, you know, a wide range of godly advice to us over, you know, a wide range of circumstances regarding both marriage and non-marriage. But whatever our past and whatever our station in life, all of us should be guided by God's word, you know, to marry or not to marry. Well, that's a question, Esther, that each of us needs to answer on our own with his help.
And with that, we really hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Mission 66. Now, Mission 66 is also heard in Spanish, and a listener in Cuba wrote to our Spanish team in response to the studies in 1 Corinthians heard on TWR station on Bonaire. It reads, "I feel very joyful with your messages that are so fabulous and brilliant in this first letter to the Corinthians. I've learned that there are no lost cases for God because in spite of the immaturity of the brothers of Corinthians, the Apostle Paul calls them saints and beloved and has the hope that the work of God in them will transform them. For God, every sin, big or small, is equally sinful, and we are used to minimizing the sin, either whether it's small or major, but for God, every sin is an infraction of the law. So the topic was very good and time for revision in the life of the church, and it's time to make an analysis of our lives." Wow. Well, friend, before we leave you, I do want to let you know about the resources available to you on TWR360.org. Well, there you will find hundreds of Bible programs as well as videos about the life of Jesus and over 30 online radio stations. Now, you can also learn about events affecting Christians that are occurring in the world by listening to Mission Network News. And there are also audio Bibles for you to experience. And all of this in over 80 languages. You'll find all of this and more on TWR360.org. That's TWR360.org. Well, we hope that you will be with us next time as we continue our study in 1 Corinthians. So until then, friend, goodbye and God bless you.
Before you hit the pause button, let me remind you to head on over to mission66.org to download your study guide. It's free. Dive deeper into the Bible teaching of John Matthews and learn how it all relates to your Christian walk. Tag along with John and Esther on our Bible road trip, episode by episode. Your study guide's waiting for you at mission66.org. That's where you can also post your questions or make a comment, and even help out with a donation to keep Mission 66's heart beating around the world. Hop on over to mission66.org. Mission 66 is a partnership of TWR and the ministry of Dr. Luis Seau.